Hello, bonjour, and welcome to La Bonne Heure with myself, Valley, here on CITR 101.9 FM, located on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. So today we've got a little bit of music, but also we have a guest here in the studio. We have Sasha, also known as Tractor Beam, with us here today. Hello.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm Allô, bonjour. Is that what your listeners are expecting from me?
Ouais, si tu veux, on peut faire l'entrevue en français aussi.
No, not right away. I need to warm up
to
the context. But yeah, I'm Sasha. I'm the songwriter and of Tractor Beam. We have a full band, but it did start as a solo project, and a lot of it does operate from myself in the demos. So we'll go with Sasha, aka of and am Tractor Beam.
Tractor Beam. You're the tractor in the Tractor Beam.
Some people do call me Mr. Beam in passing. Well, just as in like the other bandmates, and I go, no, you can't call me that. Or you can.
Mr. Beam. So Sasha, aka Tractor Beam, aka Mr. Beam.
Yes, there you go.
Okay, love that. Well, you mentioned warming up. I always like to kind of warm up with a few, I like to think of them as fun questions. Not sure if they're as fun.
No, I'm excited. I'm excited. Like icebreakers of sorts.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So to start us off, I was thinking about the name Tractor Beam.
Okay.
I was thinking of the first half, so the tractor half.
Correct.
I was wondering if you had a favorite farm animal.
Ooh. Like the very first thing that popped in my mind was just cows.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's just like the most, you know, the most farm animal. Yeah. Like there are, I guess, wild cows, but they're in the context of a farm. You know, they're kind of like fit closer than anything else. Maybe chickens, but you know, there's wild chickens and wild roosters. I'll go with cow and like a spotted cow, not a brown cow.
Like black and white.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like nice. Zebra cows.
Classic cow.
Classic cows, as they call them.
Perfect. In the second half, it's beam.
Correct.
And so I was thinking about beams, and I was thinking for some reason it took me on this whole tangent of thinking about like alien invasions and just like the beam of light that comes down and
That's actually what the name is referencing. An alien tractor beam as opposed to a beam that would keep your tractor lit at night.
I don't know, I was just like, okay, it's just like tractor beam. Okay, well, so that's the inspiration behind the name, is like alien invasion type.
Yeah, exactly. Like the laser-activated propulsion gun that sucks.
Why tractor?
Well, it's it has to do with an early sci-fi reference.
Okay.
From, I forget the gentleman who coined it, but the early it was coined in early sci-fi as just a device to suck things, and it was actually a tractor, like coming from a tractor. The tractor beam, and then I guess it evolved into something greater and more mysterious and alien-like. Huh. Sorry to interrupt your question. You got a question there going, right?
I love hearing.
It's funny though. Quickly, that you know, people always think it's a farming thing, and you know, the odd time that people do post stories at gigs. And they'll take tractor beam and they'll put like a tractor emoji.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing that for the first time when we played, being like, no, it's not a farming thing. And even Kingfisher Blues, who's going to put out the record, Tim, who runs that, has told people anecdotally that I'm a farmer from Saskatchewan and like a hockey boy, which is not
like
true. I grew up in the suburbs of Toronto. I did play hockey, but farming work is not something so that funny. I'm acquainted with at all. But yeah.
Just for laughs, or he like genuinely believes that that's...
I think it's a mix of just for laughs and a mix of like he just didn't know and being like, maybe being a label guy, he's like, oh, I'm going to build some.
Yeah.
I don't know, even if it's like hardly lore. Yeah. I mean, like, there's not I guess it's charming to be a farmer, but I don't know. Well, cool. Yeah, who knows?
Okay. That's interesting. That's so interesting. I always love hearing the inspiration behind band names. I think that's one of my favorite things is just, you know, because there are some bands who are like, oh, we wrote down 100 different names on a piece of paper and this was the best sounding one.
Yeah.
And there are others who are like, oh, yeah, I like really loved this name since I was like a kid and, you know, always wanted to name my band this. So wonderful. Okay. Yeah. But if you were like taken by aliens, abducted, that's the word. If you were abducted by aliens.
Okay.
What would you try to like say or do to get them to like like leave us alone? Or would you be like, yes, please invade planet Earth?
You know, I've thought about this a lot in my time as, you know, Earth dweller.
Yeah.
And there's a common, what I think is a misconception, is that people think that aliens, or are under the impression that if aliens were to come to Earth, people use the words like invade and, you know, how we stop them. But it's always under the assumption that aliens are out for blood.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't, it's always the underlining implication of that statement is that, yeah, alien, if people were to come from another planet, that they would be out to kind of take over or destroy Earth.
Uh-huh.
But I feel like if I, thinking from our a human, what our perspective, we were to go find another planet, I think like the human's first instinct would be to learn about what's going on there. Unless,
really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I like to think that if aliens were to come, that they would just be curious and maybe just be homies. But that's just assuming, that's assuming that they're coming out of curiosity.
Yeah.
But they could be coming because their native planet is
dying,
in which case they might be forced to come for blood. But I guess the question was, what would I do to stop them? And it would just be to show them how much we can offer and try to demonstrate value in our human race that they see as enough value to not kill us all. So I'd show them, you know, the Rocky statue in Philadelphia and I'd show them, you know, the Niagara Falls Stonehenge.
Okay.
And then I'd ask them if they did Stonehenge. And if they don't know how it happened, then I'd be like, look, humans did this. Isn't that cool?
Yeah,
yeah, I guess that's all I have to say.
You have a very positive image of, like, the human race, I feel. Because in my head, I've always seen it as if humans found life on another planet, they'd, like, destroy it.
Like,
Avatar, with the blue people.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what I imagine it would be. I think it would start out as research and science and, oh my goodness, all of this beautiful fauna and people. And then I think it would turn into...
And we'd exploit it and get greedy as us humans are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's my...
Yeah, I mean, that's totally fair. And there's enough evidence to support that being the case. But I also think that we're really capable of learning and, you know, using all the evidences of why we would do that as examples why we shouldn't in the future, because all the examples of us, you know, exploiting resources and vulnerable peoples has only, you know, suggested that it doesn't work out for the best. So maybe we'll learn and then we'll be like, ah, we'll you know, make friends with the aliens and we'll create this like utopia of like, you know, interplanetary diversity and stuff.
That's the dream. I feel like that's the hope. That's the hope. And then my last little warm-up question. Well, I originally thought of it as tractor beam as the light source coming from the tractor.
Okay, cool.
But the question still works if I'm thinking of it as the light source coming from the alien ship. Do you have a favorite light source?
Oh, such a good question.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's got to be the sun.
The sun? Okay, that's nice. That's a classic.
Yeah, I'd have to say the sun. The moon's cool. It's cool that we can see at night.
Yeah.
Artificial light's pretty gnarly.
Okay.
I don't know which ones. Some artificial light's better than other artificial light. But if I'm going light sources, then yeah, probably the sun, I have to say. I don't know what else radiates light naturally.
I like the sun. I was thinking also, I think the sun and then disco balls.
Disco balls that reflect light.
Or a disco ball that reflects the sun. That would be cool.
Okay. Like that. That's really cool. On that note, then also like mirrors are really interesting.
Mirrors are nice. Especially when they make like colorful reflections.
Oh, yeah. I live in a basement room. And someone suggests there's only one little window that lets light in. And someone suggested, hey, why don't you put a mirror up to get more light? And I was like, interesting. I didn't realize that that mirrors could, you know, provide that value. So
I would have thought of that.
Yeah, shout out mirrors.
Yeah, shout out mirrors.
More than just vanity they offer.
Exactly. Well, you mentioned the moon, and I feel like that's a good transition into one of your songs, which is called We're Just Like the Moon.
Yes, and preface and tie into band name things is that this started as a solo recording project called Strudes Monroe. And I think most of the songs that we're going to play today, if not all of them, are from that original set of songs. And for all intents and purposes, they're demos for which Tractor Beam works on now. I think like we play We're Just Like the Moon live and are recording a Tractor Beam version that's more like full bodied with live drums and the full band, and we have a cello on it and whatnot.
That's
so it'll be
nice.
Really special. And then I ended up leaving Strudes Monroe as a name because people couldn't remember it. And actually, you know, Tim from Kingfisher Blues, when I first talked with him, I was talking to him about Strudes Monroe.
Yeah.
And he said to me verbatim that it's the worst band name he's ever heard in his life. And I like remember leaving that conversation and being like, no, like I'm keeping it. And then about a year later, we booked our first show and it was under Strudes Monroe. And I was like, I don't know. I feel like it's like you say it to people and they kind of think it's cool, but they can't even like, if I were to say it to you, Valley, for example, like without you not knowing it, would you be able to even type it into like Spotify correctly? Because there's an umlaut there too.
I think I'd remember it because I'd be like, okay, Monroe, like Marilyn Monroe.
Yes.
And then Strudels is like Strudel.
Okay, yeah, so you got
so
it.
So I'd like
you
probably it. Try to remember that. And then because Strudel is like German, I'd be like, there's an umlaut. But I feel like that's quite a long pathway to take.
Yeah. Then eventually I felt like that we were going to start playing shows and, you know, wanted to take a more full band approach to the songs and write new songs with a band, and ended up leaving behind Strudes Monroe for Tractor Beam. But it's cool that I haven't listened to a lot of these songs in a while, so it's cool that we're going to go through some of the origin of, you know, how Tractor Beam started with some of these Strudes songs.
Yeah, I will say, I do think Tractor Beam's a much better name. I think it's a lot more, it stands out, you know, it's different.
It's manageable. It's cool. It's two words that are in our vernacular as humans. Like people know and use the word beam in different contexts, and people use the word tractor. So it's just like, okay, cool, tractor, beam. Yeah. And honestly, like since people have started to confuse it for a farming aesthetic, I've actually even dived into it a little bit with the branding.
Cool.
Yeah, like a single art that we're working on for the debut single in the fall is like a black and white kind of like 60s farming photo of some like cows grazing grass.
Cows, there you go.
So I was
full
like,
circle.
Full circle.
All right, here is We're Just Like the Moon by Strudels Monroe.
Just like silence in the rain that gets me lost in my picture box and the faces in the frame.
You are listening to La Bonne Heure here on CITR, and I am here with Sasha, and we're about to chat a little bit about music.
Yes! Ooh. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Beautiful afternoon, sort
it
of.
It is a really beautiful when I first started my radio show, I didn't do interviews yet. I just used to play music.
Yeah.
But I also like talking, so I'd like want to share stories,
thoughts,
but
yeah.
didn't really have... Yeah. anything to talk about because I wasn't, you know, talking to anyone else. So I would always do like a little weather update and always do like a little, oh, if you're on campus today, it's a little cloudy. But music. Okay. So I wanted to know how you discovered music. Obviously, you know, it's all around us, but how was it something, like, how did it become something that you like and that you enjoy and that you're trying to pursue?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, you know, my family, my parents, I think a lot of the people's music origin stories comes in some degree to do with how they're brought up and what if they're surrounded by passion for it and whatnot. And for me, it was very much like that. My mom was really into music, at least in the way where she would talk about being passionate about bands and had CDs around the house. She loved a lot of like 90s and early 2000s indie and like grunge, like popular alternative. I remember a lot of The Killers being played. Like, we had Hot Fuzz in the car when it came out, and some Blink-182, and she loved Leonard Cohen, which is not that genre. And like Simon and Garfunkel. And I guess she just cared. You know, she'd play it. We always had to have music on during dinner. We always had music on the house. And she spoke about the music she liked in a way that made me, I suppose, feel like it was something that you could have passion for, as opposed to just being like a passive mode of entertainment. And then on the other side of things, my dad was a musician and really also a massive, you know, music nerd. He had a massive record collection growing up, just, you know, full from, I think, like, both something that both my parents did growing up that helped me kind of like feel passionate about music was just, you know, they stayed contemporary to some degree of what was current with music. I remember like my dad had, you know, Dylan and the Beach Boys and the Beatles and whatnot in his record collection, but he'd also, we would go to the record store and like pick up like the new Fleet Foxes record when it came out, and he loved like Bon Iver. I remember the first Bon Iver record, For Emma, forever ago. I remember going to the store to get a copy of it because he had a CD rip of it from like when it first came out, because he had read about it in some magazine. And he recorded music in our basement, and he was a teacher and would sing songs to the kids, and I'd go volunteer at school. And so I guess, like, I didn't really play much growing up at all. Not until I was, like, I didn't play a lot until I was in first year of university. But I was just, like, surrounded by, you know, my parents just being incredibly, like, in touch and passionate about, like, contemporary music, which I think is... what kind of makes it like seem like something you can do and maybe put yourself into when you're provided with, you know, like my dad would talk about how Bon Iver made his first record in the cabin in Wisconsin. And he would talk about that when that record came out, and that I would have been like, you know, 10 years old, 12 years old.
Yeah.
And it was cool just like even through osmosis of not really caring, but just listening to my parents and like my dad talk about that, be like, oh, like you can just make music at home. And then when I did get to a point where I felt like it was something that I wanted to do, it didn't feel like too daunting.
Mm.
Like it did feel daunting, but at the same time, I was kind of like, oh, you know, like I'll just get a mic and I'll play some choirs and I'll sing some songs. And then that's kind
natural.
Of how, yeah, and that's yeah. kind of how Strews Miro started. And, but yeah, I guess that's how I became to love music, was just because my parents were, you know, just really into new music and music that it's easy for me to say good music because it's music that I was influenced by and hence enjoy it and, you know, subjectively think of it as objectively good. But, you know, yeah.
That's lovely. I think I would love to credit all of your musical, like, passion and talent to osmosis. That's quite funny. And so you've spoken about some of the music that they would listen to and that obviously influenced you when you were younger. But what are your current musical influences?
Oh, boy. A lot.
Like a top 3 to 5.
Yeah. I'll just kind of ramble on it for a bit, but listen, I think Big Thief is one of the best bands making music right now. Adrian Lenker is one of the best lyricists around. That's probably the newest thing that I feel really inspired by, but I keep on gravitating towards kind of the early 2000s and 90s indie, kind of like the birth of what we know of as indie rock. I mean, past, you know, Velvet Underground days, but kind of that resurgence of like Modest Mouse and Built to Spill and Sparkle Horse and The Strokes and The Moldy Peaches and Interpol and the Yeah Yeah Yeahs and a lot of like the Canadian. We brought in Sarah Morris to play cello as a permanent member of the band, so all of our shows going forward and in the past have had the past couple shows have had Sarah on cello, so we've started to adopt a very Canadian alternative in kind of like the Broken Social Scene, Arcade Fire, New Pornographers type vein of these like Canadian bands who have, you know, a lot of like big instrumentation and kind of like big cathartic stuff. So that's definitely been the current influences, like how epic and cathartic can we make our music, and then trying to find bands that found a way to be as, I guess, grandiose in presentation but at an indie level. And I guess that, like, you know, Broken Social Scene and Arcade Fire and even Black Country New Road, who gracefully just, you know, had a big lineup change, so hopefully they can bounce back. But you know, Squid, a lot of UK post-punk with alternative instruments. Yeah.
That's
the super long form, more than 3 to 5 bands.
Oh,
but
no,
it's hard to, like,
the
feels like you're omitting one.
Yeah,
so I want to give them credit as
course.
If they care if I give them credit, but I care.
They're all listening. I love when bands have like an instrument that you wouldn't expect in their lineup. So I went to watch the Arctic Monkeys now 3 or 4 years ago, and my friend and I were sitting really close to the stage but on the side, so we were looking at everything from the side basically. And it's cool because when you're at the front, you kind of see, you know, the main, you see the like the lead singer, the lead guitarist, maybe the drummer kind of like peeking out from the back. But we could see, like, all the other members. And there was one guy who was just playing the tambourine the whole show. And he was crazy. He was like throwing it up in the air. He was like putting it behind
his back.
Doing
like polyrhythms and stuff.
He was going wild. Like, and it was so great because you listen to an Arctic Monkeys song and you don't think, oh, wow, the tambourine, you know?
Yeah.
But it was just like such a performance. So I love seeing bands when they have, you know, kind of like a surprise element. And I feel like the cello is a very surprise.
There's definitely a couple moments in live shows where since Sarah's come in, we have a like break in a song that we play called Damn Cruel World that's new for Tractor Beam. And there's a pause and I arpeggiate the guitar and then it's just me and Sarah. And she arpeggiates with me and she comes through really clearly and loud.
Yeah.
And every time we play that moment, people are just like, ah, the cello! And she always like smirks and she always says after that, she's like, yeah, like it's cool when people notice that moment, but I do much cooler things over the course of this set than that moment. And I'm like, that's okay.
Yeah.
People still get to acknowledge you then.
It's about the appreciation. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I did want, like on the influences note, wanted to also add that, you know, a lot of how we sound has to do with the other bandmates too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot more collaboration with Tractor Beam than Streets Monroe. A lot of like Adam on guitar bringing in parts, Aaron on keyboard bringing in parts, Luke on bass, Sam on drums, and Sarah. And I think there's definitely moments where it like pulls away from exact, like it tends to be around what I'm influenced by just because when you write the song, it tends to be kind of like the biggest part of at least how a song can sound.
Yeah.
But, you know, Adam and Sarah, and especially like the melody parts, always bring in things that are like, I don't even, can't even put my finger on what it is because it's what they're influenced by. Like Adam exclusively listens to jazz on his free time. So he plays a lot of stuff on the guitar that's kind of strange and you know, in the end of the day, cool and nice because it's different than what I would choose and that makes it better and more collaborative. And then Sarah, coming from, you know, a classical background, plays like a lot of like a Baroque style, which is, you know, nice too, and just like keeps us being influenced by each other too. Just to like credit, I guess, all the other influences that come in outside of my own in the band.
Well, I wanted to talk about the band as a whole a little bit too, because there's a lot of crossover between Tractor Beam and Lovely Company.
That's right, yeah.
And so I wanted to basically talk a little bit about that balance. Like, how do you guys make sure that when you go into a session that's aimed to be about Tractor Beam, you don't kind of go off topic a little bit and go and start working on Lovely Company stuff? How do you, just balance those two?
Yeah, it started quite like strange and difficult, not in a bad way, just, you know, navigating it. We got, so for context, I live and play in another band called Lovely Company, and I live with the two of the members who also play in Tractor Beam. And the drum and bass is the same in both bands too, Luke Reynolds and Sam Stevens.
Mm-hmm.
And when we started, we got booked to play a Wildfire Relief show at the Wise Hall. And we didn't have anything practiced. And we were like, what's the fastest way that we can get together a set? And I had just played a birthday party cover, or a going away party cover gig with Sam and Luke, who I play basketball with on the weekends. And that's how I kind of met them. And we put together a cover set of like Dua Lipa and Lizzo and Taylor Swift for this girl's going away party. And then we got booked for this gig and like, damn, let's put together a set. And then we're like, oh, what do? You know, we have Streets of Monroe and we have Love & Company. And we're like, oh, let's just play a little bit of both. So we did, and then for September, or like for a couple months, we played like joint sets where we played a little bit of both. So practices were kind of just like, we learned a couple Streets Monroe songs, we learned a couple, Lovely Company songs, but then as both bands kind of took on a little bit more, momentum and I guess a little bit of a life of their own, and just for the for so many reasons, it just was good to split it up.
Yeah.
So now we have Lovely Company practices and tractor beam practices that are different. Mm-hmm. We also have Sarah in tractor beam.
Yeah.
And the practices in the song, like, they operate very differently. Like, tractor beam is my project.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I started it like 4 or 5 years ago now, technically, if you count Strudge Monroe stuff. And, you know, at those practices, you know, I sent out an email with like music sheets, and I kind of run those practices. I'm kind of, I guess, the leadership voice in the room, being like, yeah, exactly. And I produce those stuff and, you know, book those gigs and mm-hmm. run the Instagram, do all like anything tractor beam related, mostly is at some level orchestrated by myself. And then Lovely Company is Adam and Aaron's mm-hmm. project that they founded. So they write those songs. And it's become a little more collaborative. Like, in Lovely Company, we all kind of, you know, write. I have a couple songs that I wrote mm-hmm. with them. It's a little more it's a lot more psychedelic. And yeah. And because we split up the practices, the genres have really changed.
Okay.
Like, we had someone come up to us who didn't realize that we were in both bands. They only recognized one of us. Like, oh, are you? They were like, are you in? They went to Adam. They're like, are you also in a band called Lovely Company? And it's after a tractor beam show, and we're dressed in our tractor beam clothes. Yeah. So, and we dress differently. We basically try to make it very intentional.
Okay.
We dress differently. We have different people presented as the leaders in the front. We write the songs differently. The practices run differently. But anyways, they're like, hey, and we were like, oh yeah, we're actually all in Lovely Company too. Yeah, we dress in
Surprise.
Pink and funky clothes in Lovely Company. Tractor beam is my like I guess instructions for dress code for a tractor beam is always like, all right guys, dress like you're going to your grandma's for brunch but you still are like cool, like maybe you'll have a joint after grandma's breakfast.
Should make it
farmware.
Yeah.
Some of the bandmates definitely
like Halloween maybe.
Yeah, want like Aaron really wants to wear like have Luke dressed up in an alien costume.
That's funny.
And then all of us are dressed normal, and then just like there's an alien playing bass.
I love that.
And yeah, but I think that's, I guess, how it works is that
yeah.
you know, and as we keep doing both, I think, like, since we've split them off, they've already taken on very different looks mm-hmm. and sounds and brands and stuff. So I think as we continue to do that, it'll become much more clear and evident,
yeah.
You know, the dichotomy between the two bands, because they also do sound vastly different, which
yeah.
is interesting considering that the bands are made up of the same people. But it's like it's crazy how much a sound will change with just like a different songwriter.
That's true. That's very interesting, because I've often seen, you know, I've known the fact that you guys are kind of all merged between the two bands, and I've often wondered how you do like create those boundaries and I guess
yeah.
and balance the two. So that's very interesting. In terms of shows, I was wondering if you have maybe a favorite show memory.
Ooh, yeah, we played a sold out show in Victoria a couple weeks ago, and it was so special.
Yeah.
It was at a record store called Vinyl Envy, and it was our first time traveling to play music, mm-hmm. so it felt very surreal and magical.
Little tour.
Yeah, and it just felt like a taste of what touring
yeah.
could be like. And obviously a romanticized version, because
yeah.
we're just going for one weekend and
he
was just on the ferry. And the show itself was just really nice too. We, the crowd, I think, was what made it. It was a nice atmosphere. They had like nice string lights up top
mm-hmm.
and it was a packed house, and it started early. So we were headlining and we went on at 9, and, everyone was incredibly attentive.
Yeah.
And it was like one of those shows where like the band after that show, they said, oh, your stage banter was really good last night. And I typically feel insecure about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred to me that perhaps it wasn't that I necessarily like executed better because I was like more on it that night, but I just felt like it was a room that I felt safe talking to, and it felt like when I looked out into everyone, I felt that I could say whatever I wanted candidly without fear of, you know, judgment or losing their attention. And I think that played out into how the songs came out. And it was also our first show playing in front of like 98% strangers.
Yeah.
It's like 100 people were there. We knew like three of them.
Yeah.
And that was strange, but also special too, because it felt like we were just there to entertain, yeah, as opposed to like having some local shows feel kind of like hangouts with friends where we're kind of going up and doing our thing. Whereas like it felt professional, like being out there with strangers, and it ended up just going really well. And, you know, we played a little bit longer than we were supposed to. And I got to like, people were attentive and got to play a handful of songs by myself, stripped down that we didn't have in our set list. And a lot of people stayed and chatted after, and it was just like, it was just so wholesome.
Lovely.
And
yeah,
just felt, I felt so safe like with everyone in that crowd. And that's not always the case, like usually, you know, crowds are nice and stuff, mm-hmm, but at the end of the day, like we're a new band and we don't have a lot of music out there, or we don't have any music out there.
Yeah.
And sometimes you play early in a night, and or you play to a crowd that's, you know, expecting to have a big late dance party night, and they're distracted and talking, which is fine. I mean, like, we get over that. We're not, like, asking for everyone to be silent.
Mosh.
But it was the first time that, like, or is like, I guess it wasn't that I noticed when people are that bad, but I really noticed about these people being incredibly attentive and good. So
that's,
I guess that's
lovely.
My favorite show
that's
memory.
Really, really lovely. That's lovely. Do you have a worst or a weirdest show memory? Or actually, you can think about that
while
I play another song.
Okay, right on.
do you have a song preference from Struds Monroe that you would like to play?
Yeah, can you play Spring Cleaning?
Yes, because
it's spring, and this one will be on the Tractor Beam album. Ooh, re-recorded. So
wonderful. Yeah. Okay, here is Spring Cleaning.
Share a smile with my living room daisies. It's nice to know that my babes need me like I need them. If the day goes by where I don't water the flowers, I fear I'm wasting my human powers like a mortal man. It's nice to watch things grow. And it's nice to make things change. I cling to my spring cleaning, dig out corners to find new meaning in a different world. And I saw spots I haven't seen in years, and unpacked all my hopeless fears. I'm reborn. And it's nice to watch things grow. And it's nice to make things change. And it's nice to watch things grow. And it's nice to make things change. I shared a smile with my windowsill daisies. It's nice to know that my babies need me like I need them.
was spring cleaning. While it was playing, we actually got a phone call.
It's true.
Ring ring. If you are calling in to say hello to Sasha and I, or if you were just calling to say hello to the show in general, I think we've figured out how to use the phone.
Yeah, so give a call back.
So call again. But yeah, so if, in case they don't or until they do, a weirdest or a worst show memory?
Oh, I should have been thinking about that. But top of my head, I've broken a guitar strap playing backseat. And then broke a string playing backseat the next week. And yeah, I mean, worst show by far. We played Morrissey Pub in Vancouver. It was during COVID, sit down show. Actually, you were there, I think.
I was there.
That was probably my least favorite show we ever played because.
Because I was there. Because you're there.
No, you know what? Playing sit down shows is really tough. As a performer, when you're used to getting, you know, for me personally, I feel very hypersensitive of feedback from the crowd or just awareness of where the crowd's at. And you have no gauge of how the crowd's feeling when they're sitting down. And it's just like it allows them to be more distracted and it treats it more like you're kind of a cocktail music, which is fair. I mean, people are sitting down, they're having beers, it's a pub. But, you know, after it, I was like, I don't want to play sit-down shows again, unless it's like an acoustic or something, because it's tough. You know, you're playing like louder stuff. You're trying to get people going and they have to sit down they can't be going up to other tables because COVID. Yeah. And that was the same show that my strap came off during backseat. And it was just like all around, just like strange. Right. Just like strange. Yeah, it wasn't terrible. You know, in the end of the day, I always have fun up there.
Yeah.
But if we're ranking shows, it was at the bottom for sure.
See, that's why I like the Commodore, because I like being able to sit down at a concert, but I also like being able to stand.
Yeah, and there's options.
Exactly. Options. I love the Commodore. If you could play at any venue in Vancouver, which one would you play?
Ooh.
You can't say Commodore.
I won't say the Commodore.
Too inspired.
You know, I would really like to play the Fox or the Queen Elizabeth Theater.
Okay.
I mean, the Fox is a little smaller. I hope that we'll be able to play there before 2022 is over. Mm-hmm. But as like a more pipe dream goal is I would love to play the Queen Elizabeth Theater. I would love
but
to.
But that's sit down.
It is sit down. We got called out. but it's like it's a theater and it's you know, I think that it's an opportunity to have people kind of really dialed in and focus on the instrumentation. And I would like, I don't know, we played a blue light session with a lovely company, and the room was like acoustically treated. And it had high ceilings, and it just sounded so nice in there. It was a small room. And I think, like, doing that on a grand scale, like, playing a big theater, like, Massey Hall in Toronto is definitely one of my dream places to play in the world. I grew up in just outside of Toronto proper. And
Not Saskatchewan.
And I would frequent concerts at Massey Hall, which is one of the most brilliant live venues in the world. It's just got outstanding acoustics, and I would just love to play there, having seen so many special shows there as a teenager and a kid.
I feel like that brings us back to what you were talking about earlier with being inspired by your childhood when it comes to music. And so I think that maybe that's where your venue inspiration comes from too, is like childhood and going to those shows.
Yeah, because in the end of the day, like, a lot of the music that still carry, like, I'm always listening to whatever is a lot of new stuff, new bands, but what I come back to, like, my core of influence does come down to what I just remember loving hearing, like, bands like Arcade Fire and Sufjan Stevens for the first time. I was like just like a preteen about. And having this energy that I don't quite get anymore at the same level that I did when I was that age, but obsessed with music. Like, I love it now. I still spend a lot of my time listening to it and making it. But when I was, like, you know, 11, 12, 13, listening to Michigan or Illinois for the first time and then seeing Sufjan Stevens at Massey Hall, or, you know, listening to Funeral for the first time or whatever it may be, those, big, big cathartic, like, orchestral instrumentation bands, but in the indie scope, I was obsessed with. Like, I really felt consumed by it, and I think that's why it kind of stays with me now, because now I do, like, I love a lot of bands now, but not to the holistic approach of fandom that I had when I was a teenager. As a teenager, I would just dive so deep into loving a certain band or certain artist. And same thing with those shows, seeing them and just having that stick with me and wanting to, you know, hopefully provide some moments like that for people in the future.
I get that. I was the same, but with One Direction.
I did like One Direction at that age too, though. I remember, like, is it One Time?
One Thing.
I remember that one, that album, because I had You Don't Know You're Beautiful on it as well, correct? That was on in the car off of my iPod playing One Direction.
As it should be. Honestly, I feel like a lot of boy bands like that get a lot of hate just because they're like, oh, it's a boy band.
Yeah.
But they're really good. Like, One Direction has provided so much, you know, just musical and just, like, as a group. Just to pop culture and just to, like...
I think, like, it's just fascinating, too. And a reason why, like, I'd never, you know, try never to count out completely top 40 music, because there's something to be learned about what is being done at the highest level, in some degree of success. It might not be your, you know, metric of success or version of success as an artist, but to some degree of success, they are producing the cleanest. The vocals are mixed the best. Those singers in One Direction and that, like, top 40 adjacent music tend to be some of the best around, and it's amazing. And always, like, when you really do lock in, whether it's like smoking a joint and listening to, like, Dua Lipa and having the, like, giving it a chance to have it inspire you, even though you're used to, like, listening to Animal Collective or whatever it is it's so cool to hear how just, like, supremely well executed some music, some of that music is, and One Direction being this, like, grown from teenagers and packaged into this product with, you know, like, Trained to Dance and all pieced together. It was like, what, weren't they, like, America's Got Talent or
X Factor.
Okay. Like, built, like,
Simon Cowell, who founded them.
Yeah, poached and and put into stardom.
It's true.
It is, you can definitely learn a lot about, from, like, the business side of things, just how well they were built as a brand. And I think that's why people resent them, is just because, like, the more resources are put into something, especially when it comes to, like, music and art, it's really easy for people to be, like, feel resentful of those opportunities, because we're all out here working hard to make music, and they kind of just, like, had this big team of money. But in the end of the day, you know, I dance hard to You Don't Know You're Beautiful, and thanks One Direction.
Shout out One Direction. last thing I wanted to chat with you about was the album. You've mentioned it a couple times in passing. What can people expect? When can they expect it? What's the story?
Yeah, so I'll do a few shameless plugs out here while we're here and have the mic with music coming up. First things first is come to the Red Gate tomorrow see us play.
Thursday the 14th.
Nice. We're playing with Nonarchy, who's an outstanding band, who's very, very new. and goes to UBC, and Dawson Gould, who's a part of a band called Super Budget and has a solo project that's really nice, and Avery Sloan, who just released a new song called June that's super nice.
And song then, called June?
June, yeah.
Wow, that's, I've got a song called June.
Oh,
that's
no.
Coming out next year, so.
Oh, no.
There's going to be some competition.
And then a couple weeks from now at Portside, and those will be our last shows for a little bit because mm-hmm. we're working on finishing up debut single, debut album out on Kingfisher Blues probably next year.
Exciting.
And you can expect, if you've seen us live, you can expect a lot of the songs that we play.
Yeah.
You can expect some Strews Monroe remakes, but you can also expect a lot of new stuff. Mm-hmm. And you can expect that we'll put our heart into it, and you can expect some awesome strings and some diligent songwriting, and you can just expect to hear something that I hope will feel different than a lot of the indie bands in Vancouver right now. And it seems it's a little bit self-indulgent to say, obviously we want to that's what everyone, you know, wants to sound different and be different. But I think a lot of the intention with Tractor Beam right now is deviating from, you know, the Peach Pit and Zola's mm-hmm. kind of indie sound, and trying to, you know, bring in some, you know, Seattle 90s influences and some East Coast New York influences from the 90s, and kind of just like deviate from, you know, what's going on in Vancouver right now, and, you know, be really bring in, you know, those UK post-punk influences that are really big right now with spoken word, and have some, you know, yelling and punk moments, but also get really soft and light and acoustic. And yeah, I think whatever it is and however it's received, just know when it comes out that it'll be something that means a lot to us,
yeah.
that we're going to put a lot of work into.
I think that's a beautiful, beautiful way of putting it. And I think that's a beautiful note to end on.
Yeah.
As well. Thank you so much for coming to chat with me.
Dude, this thanks so much for having me. This is my first interview.
First interview of many.
Hopefully, of yeah. many.
Lovely. No, I that was great. And I'm really excited to hear the album when it comes
yes.
out, and to hear like the singles and stuff. And
yeah.
maybe we can have the whole Tractor Beam crew come in once it's out.
Definitely. I think I'd love to, they would love that. And I would love to have some backup here when talking about their influences. And I'm sure they'd have a lot to add on terms of, you know, balancing the two bands and
creative process as well.
Creative process. And because, you know, I'm out here representing Tractor Beam as something that I work on hard, but also it wouldn't be what it is without Adam, Aaron, Sam, Luke, Sarah, and Malcolm.
Whole crew.
Yeah. And Tim from Kingfisher Blues giving us encouragement sometimes when we need it.
That's lovely. Wonderful.
Cool.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
And for those of you tuning in, thank you so much for tuning in. Thanks to the person who called but didn't call back. So sad about that, but
yeah.
That's all right. We can play one last song, maybe.
Ooh. Let's do... You can choose.
I can choose. Okay. I like... I'm going to choose it based on the name.
Okay.
I like the name. Actually, I'm going to choose Backseat just because you mentioned breaking both a guitar string and guitar strap on that song. So I'm
yeah.
very intrigued. Here is Backseat, and goodbye, and see you probably next week, maybe the week after. Bye.
Bye.